Can I ask you to keep your Bibles open at Isaiah 65? Those of us who have been around church know that we've been working our way through the book of Isaiah. We're coming towards the end. And today we're in this incredible picture of something that's going to happen. Let me ask you a question, though. When you are thinking about maybe university holidays or school holidays, what kind of attitude do you have towards them? Do you maybe have in your heart something that says, I can't wait? And the reason you're saying to yourself, I can't wait, is maybe because you're so eager to put behind you the stress of a year of hard work. You maybe can't wait because maybe there's somebody who's not really nice to you at school or university. You can't wait to get away from them. You can't wait maybe actually for some of the things that you've got planned that are really good in the holiday that's about to come. So when you're thinking ahead to your holidays and the university holidays or school holidays or even just generally your holidays, you say, you know, I just really can't wait. Some of you, I know, have maybe had skiing trips. You were preparing for them. You got your gloves out of the cupboard. You're anticipating what's going to happen. Some of you have been skiing before, so you know some of the good things that are going to happen. You're like, I can't wait. And some of you maybe who haven't skied before are thinking, I wonder what it'll be like. It'll be so good. A new experience, and it'll be lovely, and blue skies, and beautiful scenery. And so you get really excited about what's going to happen. What I'm basically saying to you is, you know, with the holidays, you don't wait till you get there before you start to have an impact on your life. Even in advance, you're impacted by the prospect of something that's really good. You've become pregnant. You're thinking, what will it be like to have a baby in the family? Your daughter or son has become expectant. Not the son has become expectant, but they have become expectant together. And you're thinking, what will it be like to be a grandpa or a grandma? And you get really excited about that. Or you're engaged to get married. And you're thinking, what will it be like to live life as a married couple? I'm so excited about this. And so looking ahead to all these different life moments actually affects how you are today. It fills you with a joy, with a delight. In fact, that's exactly what this says here about looking ahead to what God will do one day. And so when you look at chapter 65 and verse 18, he says, be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create. So what we're reading about today is something that's going to happen in the future, but the Lord wants it to actually impact us even today. Be glad. Rejoice in what I will create, something in the future. And what he's going to create, I just jumped over in verse 17, is something that's called the new heavens and the new earth. When you put these two expressions in English together, new heavens and new earth, what basically the Bible is saying is that he's going to create, recreate everything. Absolutely everything. The two things coming together means there is not a part of anything that has been created that will not be touched by this newness that he is planning for the future at some point. Pauline asked some questions of us. I want to ask a question of us. If you just glance with me into the passage that we read, chapter 65, beginning at verse 17, when you look at these three expressions, is there any part of the Old Testament story that pops into your mind? Well, the first one is that word about creating heavens and earth. That's one of the phrases. And you get that in verse 17. And the second one is in verse 20, where the word in English, it's a strange word in English, but it's the word accursed. Accursed comes up in verse 20. And then the third expression is in verse 25, where it speaks about the dust will be the serpent's food. Do any of these three expressions make you think of a passage in the Old Testament Bible? Shout out. Genesis. Genesis chapter 1. The very first words of the Bible in Genesis chapter 1 is this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Isaiah's words here make us go, wait a minute, I've heard these words before. And when you read about this accursedness, you actually start to think, do you know, in Genesis chapter 3, God spoke about when humans rebelled against God, about there being a curse and a cursedness, as it were, on the land, on the people, on even the serpent, Satan. And of course, that's the third expression. In Genesis 3, you find these words. Listen to the way that they echo Isaiah chapter 65. This is God speaking to the serpent, Satan, who has deceived humanity. He says this, Genesis chapter 3, "You will crawl on your belly and you will eat dust all the days of your life." It's just an astonishing thing that Isaiah is given an insight by God into something that's going to take that which so awfully happened at the beginning of time and transform it. And absolutely, fantastically so. And so he says, "Behold, I'll create a new heavens and a new earth." And what he is given a glimpse back to, we know actually, if we know our Bibles, that is also a glimpse forward, not to the first book of the Bible, but actually to the last book of the Bible, where I read from at the start of our service, where God gives John a vision. John says, "Now I see a new heavens and a new earth, for the old world, everything before, has passed away." And as he goes on, he speaks about this new holy city, Jerusalem, coming down from heaven, from God, prepared like a bride. Images of Jerusalem, images of a holy city, but actually talking about the people of God themselves, like a bride for God, for the Son of God, Jesus. So what we've got here is something that actually is touching upon the very beginning of the Bible and taking us to the very end of the Bible, where we've got this great picture and hope of a new creation. And it's so good, so wonderful, that in verse 18, the Lord says to his people through Isaiah, "Be glad, rejoice forever in what I will create." Let me take a couple of steps through this passage to pick out one or two things that Isaiah says that will be part of that wonderful new heavens, new earth, which makes us, when we really have this dawn on us, when this penetrates our hearts and our souls, it is reason to be glad even today. And the first thing I want to use is, I want to use a funny word about forgetting. You know the word amnesia? You know what happens when you have amnesia? You forget things. So the wonderful expression I want to use first is a wonderful magnesia, a wonderful amnesia, a wonderful amnesia. This week, I was encouraging us to hook into a podcast that Sinclair Ferguson has been running since the start of January. And he had a little odd expression for us about how you should help yourself remember things. I have to say, I think Sinclair's great. This took me into a little bit of a world of oddity, because he said you should put a knot in your handkerchief. I only carry paper handkerchiefs, so that's a little bit tough to do, but I think he was thinking about a cotton handkerchief, and if you put a knot in it, then it will remind you of something you're to remember. And then he said, but if you forget what you're meant to remember, he said, to me, slightly oddly, he said, walk back to the place that you last remembered it, and stay there till it comes back again. And the whole point that he was making was, it's not good to forget. And it's very frustrating for many of us when we forget things that we want to really remember. But there are some things in life, isn't there? It's actually wonderful to have a forgetfulness. And that's especially true when we've gone through something painful or difficult in life. The one thing we want to do is to put it behind us. We want to get it out of our minds. Because almost like that wee worm that goes round and round and round, it's almost like we relive the moment over and over. And because it's a painful experience, it's a painful reliving. And so we long, we work hard at it to forget what we experienced. And it can be not only so frustrating that we can't forget it, but it can actually be painful. And that's at a very personal level. Do you know, there's a different type of not forgetting, though, at society level. This very week, on the 27th of January, that was a day that had been designated by the United Nations General Assembly, Resolution 60/7, to be the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And it's a day that's been set apart internationally so we do not forget what happened. And I think rightly so. because so awful were the events of the Holocaust that the United Nations wants us to remember so that as we go forward, they won't happen again. Personally, some things we forget because we don't want to remember them, but there are some things as society we try to remember so that they don't happen again. And so there's a day built into international life so that we will not have an amnesia. In the picture that Isaiah has of the new heavens and the new earth, there is actually a wonderful forgetting, because we can put behind us the pains that are part of life that we remember and remember and remember, and we don't want to remember because they hurt. We can put them aside. Look what it says in verse 17. The former things will not be remembered. We'll be freed from the pain of remembering. And we actually won't have to have a special day for the future of a kind of Holocaust-type day, because it will not happen. In the new heavens and the new earth, that kind of atrocity, that kind of societal evil will not be a part of the new heavens and new earth. So we don't have to have a special day to remember, because we can put it behind us. Even something as awful as that, we can forget it. There's a wonderful amnesia that comes to a new humanity in a new heavens and a new earth, where the pain that we think about so often is gone. Verse 17, the former things will not be remembered. If there's a wonderful amnesia, there's also a wonderful absence. There's a wonderful absence. And that absence, first of all, is from what I might call general distress. You see this in verses 19 through 23. Verse 19 is marked by what you and I know is just too frequently our experience in life. Verse 19 says that there's a sound of weeping and there's a sound of crying. That weeping is like the emotion that comes from being hurt in life. The crying is like being having pain inflicted upon us, and we kind of cry out. And so there's an expression here that talks about something I don't need to persuade you of. This is just so characteristic of our lives, that we weep and that we cry in a general sense. That will be absent. And it will be absent particularly because of the absence, in verse 20, of death. Absence of death. And in verse 20, it takes us through the kind of spectrum of life. There's reference here to an infant. There's reference to somebody who's about 100 years old. So here's my take. As I look out on you, and as I get to know you as a congregation, I think 60 is the new middle age. I'm turning 60 next year, which just might be part of what I'm thinking about. But I look at you, and 60 is like the new middle age, because you're fit and dynamic. Well, here in Isaiah 65, in verse 20, even the 100-year-old will not be like a middle-aged person, but like a mere youth. The picture is of the absence of death, as it were, but the reality of life, wonderful life, even for the 100-year-old, as it were, who'll be like a youth. Some of you are getting near there. Are you feeling so youthful? This is something to look forward to. This is great. There'll be an absence of death in the older person, but even in the younger person. Let me ask your forgiveness if I'm taking some of you just now. What I'm about to say, forgive me if I'm taking you into an incredibly sore place, okay? I appreciate that what for many of us is something we look on from a distance, for some of us this might be very painful, so forgive me. But one of the pictures here of the absence of death is also in infancy. Verse 20, never again will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days. That will be absent from this new heavens and new earth. One of my former congregations that I ministered in when I was a younger minister, and in my 9 years, we had a surprisingly large number of infants die. I didn't count, I don't have a record, but it's a record I could have kept of a number that was significant. And the agony, that that caused within family life and even congregational life as an extended family was huge. And that weeping and that pain that the writer here, Isaiah, speaks of was so vivid in these days. And even though it might not have been my child that was lost, you know, I can remember, because the agony is so severe for those who lose a child in infancy, because the agony is so severe, I can tell you where I was sitting in my room on the first night that one of these infants died, on the 31st of December, 1996. I can tell you how the phone rang. I can tell you how the conversation went. I can tell you that having gone to the hospital, that on the way home, even I had to stop my car, pull into the side. Pain. The tears that I had, even from a distance, were too great, so I couldn't even drive home. Isaiah says, verse 20, never again. Never again will there be an infant who lives but only a few days, or even an old man who doesn't live out his years. He who dies at 100 will be thought a mere youth. I don't know about you, but forget the skiing holidays, forget the university holidays, forget the even the prospect of something happening and that's exciting in life. I can't wait for that day. I can't wait for that day that Isaiah's speaking about. I am excited about the prospect of that. I'm glad to be thinking about that. I'm rejoiced. And I'm not saying this in any superficial way. I can't wait. Can you? Some people think, let me just digress for one second. Some people think that because death is mentioned to the 100-year-old person, that this passage is speaking about a period of time where there'll be kind of glory, but also some kind of death. Those who speak about that talk about it being like 1,000 years, like a special millennial period. I don't think that's what they're talking about here. I think he's talking about a time when there'll be no death. He's using language here that we can understand. There's pictures here of life that we can understand. But this is a time when there'll be no death at all, when it'll be taken away. And so fantastically so, there'll be an absence, therefore, of the general misery or the general distress that goes with that, and certainly of death itself. There's also an absence of what you might call dismay and doom. In verse 21, have ever you thought about making a business? Some of you are business people. You think about putting a business together, and it'd be quite a dismay if you thought that having worked hard at it, that somebody came in and somehow or other took it over, put you out, sacked you, removed you. Or maybe you've planned and saved and you've bought a building or you've built a building and the bank come and repossess it. Or maybe, and this is not far from the truth of today's society, not here in Scotland, but certainly in Ukraine, maybe some troops come in and take over your property. Or in some parts of Africa where some of the kind of militia that roam some of the African countries come in and send you out from your village and take over your property or burn your property. Well, it says here in verse 21, there will be none of that dismay. You'll build your houses and you'll dwell in them. You'll plant your vineyards. That's like you'll kind of create your business and you'll eat from the fruit. No longer will you build homes and others live in them or plant and others eat it. For in the days of a tree, that means that's just that magnificent old stable tree. For as the days of a tree, so will be the days of my people. This is going to be a great time of not the land producing thistles and thorns and hard work that just frustrates, but this will be a time of great prosperity and pleasant prosperity at that. There'll be no dismay. And for our children, it says, it uses the word in our English Bible here of doom, verse 23, they'll not toil and they'll bear children. This will not be the case. Our children will not be doomed to misfortune. There'll be an absence of this doom. What it means is that, you know, the things that we worry about for our children, the things that we worry about for our grandchildren, gone. There's an absence of that. So there's a great, wonderful absence in this new heavens and this new earth that Isaiah is given a glimpse into. The ruinedness of Genesis chapter 3, gone. And there's a wonderful presence. So absence, but there's a presence. Let me just very quickly say this to you. Verse 25, there's a wonderful presence of a new relationship within creation. Within creation, there's a wonderful new harmony. So, so it's pictured here as the wolf and the lamb feeding together. And the lion, which would normally eat the ox in verse 25, is not going to do that. It's going to eat the same straw as the ox, as it were. So there'll be a new harmony where some of that awfulness that we see even in creation will be removed, but even better. You see it all coming together. You know, we have great imaginations, human beings, and we write books, and there's been great number of books and even films. Disney have done well with films where there's a depiction of animals all, you know, maybe in the jungle coming together and living together. One of my, I confess to you, I think the best film ever made was of a Rudyard Kipling book called Jungle Book. Have you seen Jungle Book? Go and see the original. Fantastic. Best film ever. So you get this magical creation of the human mind in terms of animals living in harmony with one another. But have you ever noticed? We can't get this. There's always a baddie. Whether it's Shere Khan, the tiger, or the sneaky snake who wants to strangle you to death called Ka. There's always a baddie. But in the new heavens and the new earth, this will be a truth. There'll be a harmony within nature where there's no baddies. There's no baddies. There's no evil. It's just a great presence of the glory of God in the harmony of creation. And verse 25, let me put it this way to you. In the middle of verse 25, that's because the serpent's food will be dust. No Satan, no sin, no serpent, no success for him as he had back in Genesis 3 and as he has so frequently with your life and mine. When we're tempted and we give in to temptation, he's dust, as we might say. He's gone. And there's a wonderful presence of the closeness of God. Verse 23, the people are blessed. Verse 24, he's so close that he hears always and answers even while you're still speaking. A wonderful closeness. None of this where you might say in the misery of our lives, you might say to God, God, where are you? God, will you be with me? Are you with me? No, the picture here is in verse 24. Let's just look with me at what it says there. Before they call, I will answer. While they're still speaking, I will hear. The closeness of God is so precious, so sweet, that he's right there. Even before the words are out your mouth, he's answering you. What a picture Isaiah is given of this new heavens and this new earth. Now, it's not a kind of floating around in the sky type new heavens and new earth. All the pictures here have some kind of material content. There's something going to be very physical about this. It's not just a new heavens, but a new earth as well. It's incredible. It's wonderful. It's exciting. But it's certainly mysterious as to how that will play out in time. Karl Marx once said, let me kind of put this in a kind of a slightly more sort of, kind of pithy way. You know, he once said, see you Christians, it's all pie in the sky when you die. And he was saying that in a kind of mocking way. Well, actually, don't trip up over that, because there is a wonderful future to come. Pie, as he called it rather mockingly. Pie, there is pie to come. But what Isaiah has given this vision for is so that it's actually pie today as well. Because God is already at work in us and through us. And God is already wanting to encourage us with this and excite us with this so that we might, like we do with our holidays and with our other exciting things to come, say, do you know what? I can't wait. And I'm living today in the knowledge that this is coming. And it will. And it will because, here's full circle, right? It will because Jesus has secured it for his people. Jesus has taken away the sin and the judgment of sin through the cross of Calvary for everyone who believes in him. Jesus has been raised from the dead so that as he was raised bodily from the dead, so we also one day who believe will be raised bodily from the dead. But not just us, not just us, the whole of creation. Phenomenal thought. Can't wait to see it. Can't imagine how it will play out exactly. But it will.
There's an amazing absence of all the things that hurt, make us cry, cause us pain, but a wonderful, glorious presence of all the things that we long for, all the things that we can sometimes imagine in part. God says, behold, I'm making everything new and wonderfully so. And it's by grace, by his gift, that we're invited into this, simply by trusting in Jesus, his Son, the Savior, our Lord. Be glad, rejoice forever in what I'll create.